V-minus 97. Lake Maggiore, Ispra, Italy. Although Dan had never set foot in Buenos Aires, several of the city's landmarks were familiar to him from the countless news reports that had originated there since the fateful day when a supposedly alien sphere was discovered in the ocean off Miramar. The site in his dream, however, was all new. He recognized the famous Gravison signage on the building before him, and thus knew that he was looking at one of the high-end chain's luxury hotels, but his knowledge of the surrounding area ended there. Just as pertinently, he had no idea as to why he was there. "I'm not here," he thought. "It's just a dream." And then it hit him. He was lucid. It wasn't a dream at all. Like only one prior occasion, when a vision of Lolo National Forest had prompted Dan to send Trey there to record an imminent happening that turned out to be an uncloaked alien craft's overhead flight, Dan was in full mental control of a dreamlike first-person experience. Frightened, excited, and confused all at the same time, Dan endeavored to look around for clues. He tried to focus his energy on finding out precisely what the messengers were trying to tell him, rather than wondering why they were communicating with him again at all, and particularly in such a roundabout way. Suddenly, remembering the other element of his Lolo dream, Dan glanced at his wrist. He was wearing a basic digital watch, just like in real life, but its screen showed 11:15 a.m. above the following day's date. He made a mental note of the time and date, then resumed looking around for the main clue, for the main reason the messengers were showing him this, however the hell they were doing it, and for some suggestion of what he was supposed to do when he woke up. A deafening hail of gunfire coming from inside the building shut off Dan's thoughts in an instant, prompting a fight-or-flight rush of adrenaline to flood through his veins. He felt his heart pounding, sure that these sensations were genuinely physical ones, and took a step towards the building. "I'm not here for nothing," he told himself. "And besides, everyone knows you can't die in a dream, or a vision, or whatever the hell this is." Two employees from the reception desk emerged through the front door and sprinted past Dan without so much as a second glance. "Run," one called. And run he did. In the wrong direction. An incongruously calm police officer intercepted Dan before he reached the door and told him in no uncertain terms that he had to retreat, not only for his own safety, but to prevent the escalation of a developing situation which risked turning into a tragedy of a kind unseen in well over 50 years. "What's going on in there?" Dan asked, addressing the officer directly and unsure whether any kind of reply would come, let alone a useful one. "They've taken hostages," the officer said, settling that issue. "President Slater and the Japanese Prime Minister are surrounded." Before Dan had any time to vocalize the obvious question of who had taken hostages, an all-too-familiar flag was unfurled from a window on the top floor of the hotel to answer it. Jet black, with a small blue circle at its center, the flag was the calling card of the so-called Geosov movement, whose members rejected any kind of future contact with extraterrestrials and had already proven willing to engage in terroristic methods to forward their aims. This version of the flag had a conspicuous arrangement of dot-like white markings in one corner, not too unlike the constellations of stars seen on many national flags. "I can't die when I'm not really here," Dan thought to himself, sidestepping the officer and making a dash for the door. "I have to see exactly what's happened." As Dan reached the doorway and attempted to step across the threshold, he collapsed like he had been shot. His hands immediately grasped the back of his neck, trying desperately and violently to claw out something that wasn't there. Just when the pain reached a crescendo and Dan felt a momentary sensation of passing out, he opened his eyes and saw the vast bedroom he had fallen asleep in a few hours earlier. He was lying on the floor and his neck hurt. It hurt like hell, but the worst of the pain was behind him. He weakly placed his hands on the bed and pulled himself to his feet, calling for Emma as he did so. She didn't reply. "This doesn't have to be difficult," a strong American voice boomed from the bedroom's doorway. Dan froze in fear. "If you come with us peaceful—" "Emma!" Dan yelled, piercing the air with quite possibly the loudest sound he had ever made. But sitting out by the pool, Even with the external door open, she heard nothing beyond the motivational words pouring into her ears via her noise-canceling wireless headphones. The commercial for the premium headphones promised that buyers would get what they paid for, and it now seemed as though Dan was about to pay for Emma's selection in the worst possible way. He turned around and saw not one mountain of a man, but two, neither of whom were wearing any badges or discernible uniforms. Their clothing was dark, with the light making it difficult to tell black from navy blue, or perhaps even a deep gray, and their expressions were even darker. Dan was standing now, lamenting his utter lack of apparent options rather than trying to choose between any. But just as had been the case in his remarkable dreamlike vision a few moments earlier, Dan's mind was quickly made up by a harrowing development directly in front of him. For beyond his two-bedroom intruders, Dan saw a third man outside, moving straight towards Emma as she sat gazing out over the lake with her back to the danger that was rapidly coming her way. Dan's legs drove him forward before his mind had any chance to point out that there were two hostile figures standing in the way, and one of the men roughly grabbed hold of him after only a few urgent steps. Dan could only watch in helpless horror as the man outside reached Emma and put one hand over her mouth while unceremoniously forcing her from her sun lounger with the other. Her headphones fell to the ground, bouncing to a watery death in the shimmering pool. With his own ears having been uncovered all along, Dan heard Emma's muffled attempts to call his name only too well. In instinctive and protective reaction to the harrowing sound, he recklessly smashed his head into the nose of the man who had been holding him. The man let go, and Dan seized a momentary opportunity to firmly kick his colleague in the groin. "I'm coming," he called, now free and desperate to reassure her. He proceeded as recklessly as he had in the dream, with no concrete plan of what exactly he would do when he reached the unflustered third man who was in the process of carrying her away. It didn't even come to that. Before Dan came face to face with the third intruder, a fourth tackled him from an unseen position and slammed him into the ground. The force of the impact between his head and the floor dazed Dan to the point of near unconsciousness. As he lay there, helplessly, the only physical feeling he was aware of was the weight of the much larger man pinning him to the floor. "What did they tell you?" asked the fourth intruder, releasing his weight and gently slapping Dan's face to try to bring him round. "What was the message?" Dan's eyes opened wearily, with a distinct feeling circling in his aching head that they wouldn't be opened for long. These men were very clearly not friends or allies of any kind, but the impending incident he had been warned of in the dream was so explosive and so time-sensitive that Dan's conscience was positively screaming for him to choke out the words. He could only impotently watch through heavy eyelids as Emma, putting up a brave but futile fight, was carried past his fallen body towards the front door. Dan knew for certain at this point that whoever these men were, they were not to be trusted. If they were willing to be so needlessly rough with Emma now, there was no way he could safely expect them to return her unharmed if he volunteered the knowledge they so clearly wanted. The knowledge granted to Dan in the Dreamtime message was the only leverage he had, and his scrambled mind wrestled with the uncomfortable possibility that this leverage was the only thing keeping the pair of them alive. "Tell me," the man demanded, anger crossing his face as he positioned a firm hand under Dan's chin and pressed against his throat. "What did they want you to know?" As Dan McCarthy felt the darkness coming, he forced out one final sentence with as much energy as he could muster before slipping into unconsciousness. "I'll tell you fucking nothing."